This is a production of Cornell University.
Well, thank you for coming out on this lovely rainy afternoon. Shall we call this good English weather for a good English department, maybe? I'm Robert Morgan. And I have the pleasure of introducing John Murillo. First, I would like to sincerely thank our two anonymous donors for making this reading series possible. They have really given us a tremendous gift of visiting writers, poets, fiction writers over the past few years. And, of course, I want to thank Marianne Marsh, our guardian angel, and Karen, also our guardian angel. I'll begin by quoting Martín Espada, who says, John Murillo is dangerous. He's young and urban. He's African-American and Chicano. He's male. He fits the profile of dangerousness on many levels. His Spanish surname evokes the immigrant invasion so dear to television demagogues. He presents a specter of violence, either criminal or worse, revolutionary, to the easily frightened majority. Like most people who fit the profiles, he's more endangered than dangerous. In fact, John Murillo is dangerous for all the wrong reasons. Murillo is a true poet, a wordsmith, a songmaker, intelligent, principled, compassionate, and fearless. John Murillo was born in Los Angeles, grew up in several cities, and graduated from the MFA program at New York University. He's won more prizes and fellowships than I can easily list. He's served as the J.C. and Ruth Hall's Poetry Fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Creative Writing, and he's received fellowships from the New York Times, Kaveh Khanum, and the Fine Arts Center at Provincetown. He's a two-time Larry Neal Writers Award winner and has served as the Elma P. Stuckey Visiting Emerging Poet in Residence at Columbia College in Chicago. His poems have appeared in many journals, including Callaloo and Plowshares, and his first volume, Up Jump the Boogie, appeared just this year. At present, he is visiting poet here at Cornell. Like the poet he admires most, Etheridge Knight, Murillo's work is informed by a relish for wordplay and improvisation, an idiom of verve and nerve, rap rhythm, city beat, rhyme variations and permutations fashioned out of the richness, the mixtures, the violence, the contradictions and polyphonies of the city, as well as memories of, quote, the field songs in the bone. He makes a street blues, a blues chanting hoodoo revival, speaking like a, quote, deacon in the church of the hallelujah beatdown. The intense drive to escape the cycles and defeats of the inner city is matched in Murillo's work by an equally intense nostalgia and loyalty and affection for the world he has left. The affection for the biological father, a veteran of Vietnam, victim of Agent Orange, and the poetic father, Etheridge Knight, inspires much of Murillo's work. In Flowers for Etheridge, Murillo refers to the older poet as the Virgil to my Dante. His actual father is my risen black Lazarus. The overall movement of Murillo's poetry is affirmative and transcendental. Quote, all songs are love songs, he says on page 87. And quote, I say, praise it all. He concludes his book, the exact moment I let in this city, let out the sweat, and come to own this mighty, mighty joy. Please join me in welcoming John Murillo.
I'm not expecting a call. This is for me to keep time. thank you, Bob, for that introduction. And thank you all for coming. I want to thank everybody that Bob thanked and all the people who made me feel so welcome here, our colleagues. And very, very big thanks I want to give to my students who came under pressure of... I was going to give them reverse extra credit, so I wasn't going to give them anything extra if they came, but if they didn't come, I'd take points off. They thought I was joking, too. And I want to thank, actually, three people came all the way from Syracuse. I taught in this workshop this summer in Florida. They had this teen writer's residency. And it was a two-week program. And it was really, really, Denise Duhamel taught poetry. Ben Percy taught fiction. And Denise D'Onofrio, she taught creative nonfiction. And I just kind of made sure nobody got, in trouble or anything like that. But three of the people didn't get in trouble, but were very talented writers, came out, and just want to say thank you for you guys for coming out. Let's see. I'm going to start with this poem called Ode to the Crossfader. And a crossfader, for those of you who are not sure, is a lever on a mixer. A DJ uses a mixer. Right, and he has these turntables here. So the crossfader is a switch that allows him to blend, cut, scratch one turntable to the other. Right. So this is Ode to the Crossfader. You guys like my suit? I was telling my mother. She's like, "You're wearing a suit." I said, "Yeah." I told her. I said, "Look, it's like if George Clooney and Denzel Washington had a baby and he came out Latino." All right, Ode to the Crossfader. Got this mixboard itch, this baseline lifted from my father's dusty wax, 40 crates stacked in the back of the attic, this static in the headphones, hum in the blood, this deep bass buckshot thump in the chest. Got reasons and seasons pressed to both palms. Two coins from each realm pressed to both palms. This memory, ear, cross faded and cue these knuckles, nicks, and night sweat writes this frantic abacus of scratch, ear, scratch, ear, scratch. Got blood in the crates, in the chest, in the dust. Field hollers to break beats. My father's dusty wax, my father's dust. Got reasons, got night sweats and hollers pressed to both palms, break beats and hollers pressed to both palms, static in the attic, stacked crates of memory, memory dust, blood and memory, crossfaded and baits, crossfaded and cued, crossfaded and static, stacked hollers, got reasons in the dust, in the chest, got seasons in the blood, in the headphones hum, this deep bass buckshot blood in both palms, my father's dust pressed to both palms, got reasons and reasons and reasons and reasons. Free water. So, just so you know, I know there are like certain traditions in certain venues, and I know like, in academia sometimes, you hold your applause to the end. If you want to give me applause between poems, feel free, all right? I'm from the from that school. If you want to hold your applause and you don't, do that too. So I was telling John Lennon earlier today, John Lennon, and I had an interview with him, and I was telling him how I came to poetry through hip-hop. I started out as a rapper, as an MC, and so I had been rapping since I was 11, and when I was about 17, we started going to the studios, recording demos, things like that, And this poem is about that first summer, 1989. There are no windows here, and the walls are lined with egg cartons. So if we listen past the sampled piano, drum kick and speaker box rumble, we'd still not hear the robins celebrating daybreak. The engineer worries the mix board, something about a hiss lurking between notes. Dollar Bill curses the engineer. Time we don't have, says it's just a demo and doesn't need perfecting. Fools always want to make like Quincy Jones when you pay him by the hour. DJ Eddie Scissorhands, because he cuts so nice, taps ashes into an empty pizza box, head nodding to his latest masterpiece. Beethoven splice with Mingus mixed with Frankie Beverly, all laid on Billy Squire's big beat. I'm in a corner, crossing out and rewriting lines I want to forget years later, looking up every now and then to watch Shakespeare, Pomona's finest MC, in the vocal booth. Spitting rhymes he never bothers putting to paper, nearly hypnotized by the gold-plated Jesus swinging from his neck as he too will swing days from now before they cut him from the rafters of a jail cell. Now, I started rapping when I was about 11. Around the same time I started breakdancing too, b-boying. That's pretty good. There's a song by a group called Rage Against the Machine called Renegades of Funk. You know the song? Some of you? Okay. Well, they actually bit that song from an earlier group called Africa Babada and Soul Sonic Force. We used to break to it all the time. It's called Renegades of Funk. That's where this poem gets its title from. And I was speaking with some students earlier about form and the things that form can teach us. And I'm a big fan of the sonnet. I don't write them often enough, but there's something about the sonnet and the things it can do. So I wrote 7 of them. This is actually a crown of sonnets. And the song Renegades of Funk had this refrain: no matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. You guys remember that? It's on YouTube. What I need you to know, haints is a word that's in here. Haints, it's from Southern lore. I guess it's like a ghost, or, you know, similar to the word haunt. And what else did I tell you? That's it. Okay. Renegades of Funk. 1. When we were 12, we taught ourselves to fly, to tuck the sky beneath our feet, to spin the world on fingertips, to pirouette on elbows, heads, and backs, to run away while standing still. So when Miss Jefferson, her eyebrows shaved and painted black, the spot of lipstick on her one good tooth, would praise the genius Newton, I knew then to keep her close, to trust her like a chicken hawk at Colonel Sanders. I refute your laws, oppressor. I'm the truth you cannot stop. Busting head spins on her desk, a moonwalk out the door, refer to Mr. Brown's detention. Jefferson, Newton, Brown, everybody trying to keep a brother down. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. Attention, rhythm's why they keep us. Down in Memphis, blues men beg the sky to pour down liquor. Empty bottles, barren hands, a pawn shop banjo gathers dust. Guitars sit idle, songs forgotten. Ghosts come late to find the crossroads clutter. Strip malls now where haints once hung. The young, it seems, forget the drum and how it bled, the dream and how it fed. The mothers on the auction block. But rhythm's why they keep us, rhythm's why we've kept up. Cotton fields and backs that creak, a song for every lash, a cry on beat, and blues sucked dry. The strip malls bleed, the ghosts from banjos, hollers caught in greed. 3. The ghosts, the angels, holocaust, the need to shake these shackles, field songs in our bones. As if at 12 we knew all this, we named our best moves free. To break and pop lock, blood and bruises marking rights, we'd gather, dance ourselves electric, stomp and conjure storm, old lightning in our limbs. We thunderstruck maroons, machete-wielding silhouettes, reject the fetters, come together still. Some call it capoeira, call it street dance. We say culture. say survival. Baez, Birimbau, were a boombox in the boogie down, a killing art as play, an ancient killing art to break us free. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. Oh Lord, send something down to break us free. Says send us something now to set us free. Swing low, sweet chariot, to rescue we. The calls went up in every blessed field. The people shouting, singing in the fields. They lit the torches, compromised the yield. This earthly house is gonna soon decay. Say, look like master's house gonna soon decay. I got my castle where he planned to stay. Some waited in the hills till nightfall came. An exodus of thousands. When night came, they built their fires, sang into the flames. Upon the mountaintop, the good Lord spoke. And out his mouth come the fire and smoke. 5. The art of spitting fire. How to smoke a fool without a gun. We learned that too. See, we studied master poets. Big Daddy Kane, not Keats. Rakim, not Rilke. Raw, I ain't no joke, our Nightingales and Orpheus. And few there were among us couldn't ride a beat in strict tetrameter, impromptu odes and elegies instead of slanty rhymes, we gangster leaned them. Kicking 17 entendre couplets just to fuck with old Miss Jefferson, the Newton freak. And sometimes we even got her out her seat, her 10 thin digits waving side to side, held high and hiding nothing while her eyes could see. And we knew nothing but what eyes could see. The burnt-out liquor stores and beauty shops, mechanics' lots, abandoned, boarded-up pastrami shacks where seemed like every day we used to ditch class, battle centipedes and space invaders. Gone. Or going fast. What eyes could see was flux. The world and us and all we knew like smoke. So, renegade we did against erasure, time, and hell we thought against the reaper too. We left our names in citadels, sprayed hieroglyphs in church, our rebel yells in aerosol. We bomb, therefore we are. We break, therefore we are. We spit the gospel, therefore are. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. The walls are sprayed in gospel. This is for the ones who never made the magazines. Between break beats and bad breaks, broken homes and flat broke, caught but never crushed, the stars we knew we were, who recognized the shine despite the shade. We renegade in rhyme and dance on trains and walls. We renegade in lecture halls, the yes, yes, y'alls in suits, construction boots and aprons, out of work a 9 to 5, still renegade. Those laid to rest, forgotten renegades, in dirt too soon with kiriyaki, big pun and pop. Renegade, 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 renegade. I sing your names in praise. Remember why? When we were 12, we taught ourselves to fly. Okay. How you guys doing? You good? All right. So, I thought I was going to become a professional b-boy, professional breaker. And that was actually my fallback plan. My actual plan was to become a professional basketball player. I grew up in L.A., Laker fan. Any Laker fans here? One. Thank you. There he is. All right. This is for you. yeah, so a lot of us thought we were going to be, you know, grow up and become these big-time ball players. And this poem is a basketball poem. One thing you need to know in here, Grambling refers to Grambling University. It's a small black college in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's called Practicing Fadeaways. On a deserted playground, in late day sun, my palms dusted black, dribbling a worn leather ball behind my back, this loneliness echoes from the handball courts nearby. Nearly all the markings, free throw lane, sideline, center circle, rub to nothing. A crack in the earth cuts across the schoolyard, jagged as a scar on a choir boy's cheek. 20 years ago, I ran this very court with 9 other wannabe ballers. We'd steal through peeled chain links or hop the gate to get here, our blacktop Eden. One boy, who had a funny pigeon-toed set shot and a voice full of church bells, sang spirituals every time he made a basket. The other boys humming along, laughing, high fives flying down the court. And a boy we called the Sandman, for how he put you to sleep with his shoulder fake a drop step. Over 6 feet tall in the 10th grade, smooth talker with an itch for older guys' girlfriends. One Sunday morning, they found him stabbed to death outside the Motel 6. Pockets untouched, bills folded neatly against his beautiful, cooling thigh. And downtown Ricky Brown, whose family headed west when he was 2 but still called himself a New Yorker, who never pulled from less than 30 feet out and could bank shots blindfolded. He went to Grambling, drove himself crazy with conspiracy theories and liquor, was last seen roaming the French Quarter, shoeless, babbling about the Illuminati's 666 ways to enslave the populace. At 16, I discovered Venice Beach, with its 1,000 bodybuilders, roller skates, and red thong bikinis. I would stand on the sidelines and watch the local ball players, leaping and hollering quicksilver giants, run and gun, already grown into their man bodies. Funkadelic rising from a boombox in the sand. Now, all I hear are chain nets chiming as I sink one fade away after another, the backboard, the pole, throwing a long shadow across the cracked black asphalt. What the nets want must be this caress. This stillness stretching along every avenue, over high school gymnasiums and deserted playgrounds, and the ambulance drivers drifting into naps back at the station house. What the boys who ran these courts wanted was a lob pass, high enough to pull them into the sky, something they could catch in both hands and hang from, long enough for someone to snap a photograph, to hold them there, skybound, risen. So basketball was important to me for a few reasons. One, for the most part, it kept me out of trouble. It didn't keep me out of all the trouble, but it kept me out of a lot of trouble. My father was the other thing that kept me out of trouble. But between basketball and my father, I still found a way to find my trouble. But it was also something that connected my father and I. So like most men, I think most fathers and sons, or maybe hardly any, maybe just me and my father, we would never apologize to each other, you know, so like there was this always this, you know, I think when men get to a certain age, you have this kind of butting of heads with your father. I didn't have that because my father was a drill sergeant in Vietnam, so I was like not really trying to, you know, make him mad. but there were silences or moments of silence, right? And we would reconcile those moments not by saying I'm sorry or anything like that, but we just bring up basketball. That was like the default topic of conversation. So say we had gotten into something earlier that day, I'd walk into a room and the Lakers were on, I'd say, who's winning? And he'd say, Lakers, because Lakers win. when he got sick, he died of lung cancer in 96. And there was a moment where he was telling me, you know, about his treatment and the discomfort. And it was this really awkward pause in the conversation. And the first thing I could think to do was bring up basketball. And that was when the Lakers got Shaquille. Right, so I brought him out and said, hey, you know, Lakers got Shaquille. And he said something like, the fuck you telling me that for? You know, I'm not even going to live to see the next basketball season. And that's when it hit me, you know, because months, years, like, that's abstract, right? But you say, I'm not going to live to see the next season, then I'm like, damn, that's when it becomes really real. So this poem deals with that, and it's a dream fragment, so it's all over the place. I think that's all you need to know. It's called Dream Fragment with a Shot Clock and Whistles in it. It starts with an asphalt sky, blacktop courts, buzzards perched on every rusted rim. It always starts here. I'm bringing the ball up left-handed, just like you. Left-handed, just like you taught me. Cross half-court, stutter step, reverse pivot and pull. Point your elbow at the bucket, boy. And follow through. Always follow through. Got to get up, gather my legs, lift, lock into eyes, eager to peck the brittle, 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 brittle bones of my layups. Shot clock dies, a whistle blows, out of bounds, ball in hand, scan the court for an open man. Daddy, did you hear? The Lakers got Shaquille. Think this will be our season? Eyes eager to peck the brittle, brittle, brittle bones of my layups. Nowhere to pass a whistle blows. Boy, my lungs are black as basketball grooves. It ain't no more seasons. And I begin again. Pushing up court. Black top, Sisyphus, and sweat socks. Can't see the clock, but I know it's there. Said I can't see the clock, but I know it's there. It ain't no more seasons. Just a few quick ticks and that rock you squeezing. Stutter step, another whistle, and I'm five again. Synthetic leather in hand, you hold me overhead and laugh. Now we both got some sun to hold on to. Under skies as cracked and lovely as this concrete that keeps us from falling, I push the ball off fingertips and listen for the kiss of chain nets like a glass cage, chain nets like a glass cage shattered on a planet far away. So, one of the things we used to do, well, we'd have people over our house to watch fights. Not our fights, but like, I'm about to hit your father, come over, you know. No, we would order fights, like, we had this thing called On TV, which is before HBO, and it was like, it's like pay-per-view, but like the Everything Channel, movies, sports, all kind of stuff. So whenever there was a big boxing match, like the family would come over, and it was pretty cool. One fight in particular I remember was the fight between Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran. It's it's infamous for Duran supposedly, you know, had said no mas when he was quitting. Howard Cosell actually put those words in his mouth. But this fight, this poem takes place that night, November 26, 1980. It's the title of the poem. Five faces bunched in the glow of an old floor model, black and white. In a shadow, the shape of knuckles splashed against the living room wall. My father hollers when hands of stone, Roberto Duran, waves off the fight and slinks toward the corner. Cutman and handlers struck dumb as ringside tuxes. Dumb as the uncles and cousins squeezed onto our couch, cigarettes hanging from every open mouth. Sugar Ray, all rhythm and blur, afro and short shorts, deals a three-piece to the gut for good measure. And Duran is done. Uncle Buck praises Jesus, a C-note riding on Ray in eight, says he's late for a crosstown Ronda rendezvous, grinding the air, smacking imaginary ass. Cash in his pocket, a woman to see, we know Buck won't be with us for a good few days. What we don't know is why. What we can't know is how. Ronda, the one he won't bring by, since Crazy Pete caught her peeking at his cards and ran home to load his Roscoe. She of the Chaka Khan wigs and thick lips, hip to Buck's heavy bedding and the bragged on odds, smells presidents from miles away. The fresh bulge of an old billfold and his telephoning homeboys from the other side of Exposition Boulevard. Buck grabs his coat, shuffles into night. We don't know the next time we'll see Buck is in traction. Bandaged, jaw wired shut, tubes for piss and shit. Back home, I'll be in charge of soup and vitamin shakes, the spoons he'll push away, the straws he'll spit out. I'll say nothing of the whispers, the rumors, that he's marked as a mark now. I'll not repeat that a pussy-whipped gambler ain't too long for this world. I'll leave the grown-up talk to grown-ups. Make the shakes, serve the soup. At nine, I've years to know a thing about this kind of pain. The kind with little to do with bicycle chains, aluminum bats, or boots between shoulder blades. But I know enough not to refuse this man his bottle of nitrate. When he motions for it, I know I'm not supposed to. But I'll unscrew the top, put it to his lips, and watch the burn. The stitches give, scabs scratched open in what passes for sleep, and halfway understand. Watching Buck flip channels, everyone replaying that last long round, the night, the first clear words we've heard from Uncle Buck since he left us for his rendezvous. No mas, no mas, no mas. Okay, just a couple more. So when I was a kid, my father used to take me to the movies all the time. We spent all day in the movies. And I think it was actually supposed to be like looking for a job. And then we go, we pay like one fee and then just watch movies all day. And it was cool. We like, you know, we make food and bring it in, sneak it in, and have the whole place smell like, you know, like pork chops or whatever. He used to like kung fu movies a lot. And one movie in particular we saw a couple times called Into the Dragon. You guys know this movie? Bruce Lee? Bruce Lee was a star, but what really stood out to me was a scene early on in the movie where Jim Kelly, who was this black martial artist, beat up like this police officers and then drove off in the police car. And I thought that was cool. So it stuck with me. So that's where the poem starts. It's called Into the Dragon. Los Angeles, California, 1976. For me, the movie starts with a black man leaping into an orbit of badges, tiny moons catching the sheen of his perfect black afro, arc kicks, karate chops, and 30 cops on their backs. It starts with the swagger, the cool lean into the leather front seat of the black and white he takes off in. Deep hallelujahs of moviegoers drowning out the wah-wah guitar. Salt and butter high-fives, right on, brother. And daddy, glowing so bright, he can light the screen all by himself. This is how it goes down. Friday night, and my father drives us home from the late show. Two heroes Cadillac and across King Boulevard. In the car's dark cab, we jab and clutch Jim Kelly and Bruce Lee with popcorn breath. And almost miss the lights flashing in the cracked side mirror. I know what's under the seat, but when the uniforms approach from the rear quarter panel, when the fat one leans so far into my father's window, I can smell his long day's work. When my father, this John Henry of a man, hides his hammer, doesn't buck, tucks away his baritone, license and registration shaking as if showing a bathroom pass to a grade school principal. I learned the difference between cinema and city, between the movie house cheers of old men and the silence that gets us home. So, two more? Yeah. See, here's the thing, it's hard because, like, you know, people are like, yo, I drove in the rain, you better read me some poems. But then, but on the other hand, you don't want to read too long, you know, because, like, you know, you just don't. So, two more is good, yeah? Okay. So, as Bob was saying in the introduction, Ether's Night is probably the poet who has the greatest influence on my work, my aesthetic. But the artist who has the greatest influence, I say, is Marvin Gaye. That's the real Virgil to my Dante. So I do sometimes, I put some Marvin Gaye on, and I write, and you know, I kind of hope that the Marvin Gaye will just come through me and out my pen. It doesn't work, but you know. One of his songs is, my favorite song of his, I think, is called Trouble Man. And if you don't know the song, go on YouTube tonight and that's your assignment. Go on YouTube and put in Trouble Man. And you'll be cooler by morning, I guarantee you. All right. This poem takes its title from Trouble Man. It's the bone of a question caught in your throat. Pre-dawn sides of the day's first traffic. Shoulders like fists under your skin. Say it's raining this morning. You just left a woman's blue musk and duvet to find devil knows what in the world. Your wet collar, too thin jacket, no match for pissed off sky gods. And say this car pulls near. Plastic bag for passenger side window, trading rain for music. Marvin Gaye. And maybe you know this song. How long? Since the man you called father troubled the hi-fi, smoldering Newport in hand, and ran this record under a needle. How long since the man's broken falsetto colored every hour indigo? Years since he drifted, dreaming into rice fields, stammered cracked Viet Cong, gunboats and helicopters swirling in his head. Years since his own long walks, silent returns, and Marvin's many voices, his only salve. He came up harder than you know, your father. Didn't make it by the rules. Your father came up hard, didn't get to make no rules. Graying beard, calloused hands, fingernails thick as nickels. You were the boy who became that man, without meaning to. And know now, a man's life is never measured in beats, but beatdowns. Not line breaks, just breaks. You hear Marvin fade down the avenue, and it caresses you like a brick. Your father, Marvin, and men like them have already moaned every book you will ever write. This you know, baby. This you know. So I was teaching in Madison, Wisconsin last year at the University of Wisconsin. And when I was there, I realized how much I love New York. Madison's cool. This is on camera, right? Madison's dope. I love Madison. But I love New York. I'm a city guy, you know? Ithaca's cool, too. I love Ithaca. But, you know, I was there. I was just really missing the city, man, every aspect of it, but especially the train rides, you know? Like, the train is like a world unto itself. So this poem, it's a love song to New York. New York State. I'm going to end with this and say thank you guys for coming out. It's been cool. All right. It's called Song. I know it's wrong to stare, but it's Tuesday. The express is going local, and this woman's thighs, cocoa butter, crossed and stacked to her chin, are the only beauty I think I'll see for the next 40 minutes. Not the train's muttering junkie, who pauses a little too long in front of me, dozing but never losing balance. Not the rat we notice scurry past the closing doors, terrorizing the rush hour platform. Not even these five old black men harmonizing about begging and pride, about a woman who won't come home, but skin, refracted light, and the hem's hard mysteries. I imagine a man somewhere in this city working up the nerve to beg this woman home, the sweet reconciliation of sweat on sweat and pride, not even afterthought. My own woman, who I beg sometimes not to leave and beg sometimes please to leave, never has, also waits uptown in a fourth floor walk-up in an old t-shirt for me to make it back. She waits for me to come through jungles, over rivers, out from underground. She waits without fear, knowing no matter what, I will make it home. And God, there were times I probably shouldn't have, but did, and lived to see this day, the junkies, the rats, the thighs, and I say, praise it all, even this ride. It's every bump and stall and each funky body pressed to another. Sweat earned over hours, bent over moats, caged in cubicles. And after it all, the pouring of us like scotch into daylight. Dusk, rush hour, this long trip home, praise it all. The dead miss out on summer. The sun bouncing off moving trains and a woman to love you when you get inside. Somewhere in the city, a man will plead for love gone, another chance, and think himself miserable. He'll know somewhere deep he may never win her back, but he'll know even deeper that there is a kind of joy in the begging itself, that all songs are love songs, blues especially. Praise the knowledge. Praise the opening and closing doors, the ascent into light, heat, each sidewalk square, cracks and all, the 112 stairs between lobby and my woman's front door, the exact moment I let in this city, let out this sweat, and come to own this mighty, mighty joy. Thank you. Hay preguntas? Who has questions? Anybody have questions? I'll answer some questions. Yes, sir.
So earlier today, we talked about how we, some of your poems, particularly over the Crossfader, you often read different versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you read it differently tonight than you did earlier this afternoon on the podcast. So my question is, how do you decide how you're going to read it? Are you reading the crowd? Is it a matter of what your mood is at the moment?
Both. The crowd, the mood. It's funny, though, because if you go on YouTube, every one of those is all the same version of this poem. You're like, you don't change nothing. I heard you on YouTube. But, yeah, you know, and sometimes I just get in it and I just freestyle to see, you know. What he's talking about, the first poem in the book, the first poem I read, it's, I was telling him during our interview earlier today that, that's John Lennon, by the way. He thought I was joking when I said John Lennon, right? That's John Lennon. That's so cool. So what I do sometimes, I'll read, I know where it's going to begin and I know where it ends. And sometimes I'll just mix up words and I'll basically like just cross cut and fade and do all the kind of stuff with the words that are on the page. And I don't know any more than anybody else what I'm going to do sometimes. But that keeps it fun. I was telling John that I've done about 60 readings since February. And I get bored hearing my own voice. I get bored with my poems. So this is a way to keep it fun for me. I just mix it up. And sometimes it falls flat. You know, sometimes it's horrible. And I'm like, you know, I shouldn't have done that. But, you know, sometimes it works.
John, you started out as an MC, now you're a DJ.
I know, right? But I'll not breakdance again, though. That's over. It's over. In the back.
Okay, I'm in a creative writing class, and I've really only ever done narratives, and now I'm doing poems, and it's really kind of a scary thing for me. So what, do you like anything that you could offer that makes it less terrifying?
Wow, that's a hard question. No. I don't know, I guess it's finding joy, and you know, the thing is, not to diss what we do at all, but it's, you know, it's just writing, you know, it's not like you in a lab, you know, and something's going to combust if you get it wrong, you know, just have fun with it as best you can. And find something that you love, you know, to read, and maybe you can hook onto that, and that'll actually open up other doors, and maybe free up something in your own writing. But beyond that, yeah, I pray for you, though. Anybody else? Yes, Joanna.
Are most of your poems written about, are they like mostly taken from your own life?
That's a good question. Yes and no. I consider myself a poet of witness, right? So I'll just give a brief biographical note of myself. I came up in South Central LA, is where I was born and raised. In the 70s and 80s, where a lot of, you know, the gang activity was taking place. Of my childhood friends, I'm one of the only ones who made it out and, you know, are still like a functioning, productive citizen. So I consider myself as having a responsibility to tell their stories as well, because a lot of them, those people didn't make it out. So some of the stories are mine, some are others. Some I'll mix and match, you know, just to make a better poem. But that's, yeah, and I haven't even exhausted, you know, many of the stories from people around me. Sometimes I feel a way about it, you know, whether I'm appropriating things that don't belong to me, right? But these people shared both their lives and deaths with me, so I feel like, you know, this is as much my story to tell as theirs. Yes?
Where do you find the most inspiration for the rhythm that you use?
I have the question, if you didn't hear, is where do I find the inspiration for the rhythm that I use? And really music, you know. I was born into a culture that, you know, that where music plays a big part of everything we do. Up Jump the Boogie, the title of the book, I'll just say briefly, deals with that idea, right? So through slavery, through, you know, Jim Crow oppression, through, you know, the Civil Rights Movement, all these things, music, there's always a soundtrack playing, right? And so that's been ingrained in me. But I did, like John was saying, start out as a rapper, right? So I have, at this point, like 27 years of listening to metered verse, rhyme, alliteration, assonance, all these things, you know, four beat lines. So sometimes it's hard for me not to write like that. You know, I have a a conditioned ear for that? It's a good question, though. One last one, I guess. No? All right, well, thank you, guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.